Good morning, everybody. This is the Retail Connections podcast series. My name is Chris Field. We are at the midpoint, if we can say that, of the COVID-19 crisis, and some stores are now starting to reopen. I spoke to Alexis De Salva, who is an e-commerce, retail, and apparel analyst and influencer for Mintel.
So, okay. Alexis, how are you? Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too, Chris. I'm doing well. It's a little rainy in Chicago, but other than that, I'm doing well trying to keep up with everything going on in retail, which is never ending.
I think where I'd like to start is almost, if any of us can even remember a time before coronavirus, but there were a number of trends in your industry in the US that I think we ought to reprise because they are indeed very interesting. And I can remember, again, seems like an eon ago at NRF in New York in January, where various speakers were standing up and talking about how the apparel industry was changing because of consumer habits and how consumers were changing the way that they buy apparel, that they are looking at sustainability in that mm-hmm. sector. They're looking at possibly renting more clothing mm-hmm. as opposed to buying it, about how they might actually be buying less apparel. And it all sounded pretty gloomy. And then suddenly, before we had time to think about what the hell all that meant, along comes coronavirus, which I suspect has probably accelerated some of those trends. But I don't know if you could start by winding us back, if you like, to before the current crisis. And then inevitably, we'd like to get into that as well.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you said it best. I feel like it feels like it was, you know, thousands of years ago. It's almost hard to imagine. But yes, I myself was at NRF and I actually led a panel discussing some different experiences and different models, the circular economy being one of them. We had a panel that included Rent the Runway. So it is interesting because I think, you know, just what, 4 long months ago, I guess I should say, you know, the retail industry was headed into the new year, I think, with some pretty good tailwinds. And in apparel, especially, I mean, I think things have been changing and have been brewing, I think, for the last few years as consumers have more access to information. They have become more aware, more informed, and they're more conscious of not only what they're consuming, but how they're consuming it. So you mentioned sustainability, maybe buying less. All of that has kind of contributed to this interest in the circular economy. So going away from traditional linear models of retail where something's made, a retailer sells it to a customer has it, and then it kind of drops off the face of the earth. We don't really know what happens to it, but we know that it contributes to a lot of waste. Now we had been seeing this kind of boom in wanting to change that model and make it more circular so that things can be repurposed, reused, recycled, and they can kind of eliminate some of that waste and be better for both the brand or retailer and the customer and then the environment.
Is there a sort of charitable element in that as well? Because I'm assuming that it isn't necessarily about, say, the Rent the Runway model where the clothes go back and they're dry cleaned and then they're reissued. I guess there must be some talk amongst consumers about, if I don't need that garment anymore, can it be put to better use by perhaps someone else who's in greater need than me?
For sure. And I think, you know, with rental and resale goes there. So I know Rent the Runway had been, they would donate some of those clothes that were no longer available for rent or had been rented maybe too many times. And then in the resale market, there's an obvious, I think, charitable base there where it's to your point, like if I don't need this, someone else can. And I think it's just, the timing is right too. So I think we're seeing this with like consumers sharing out their homes, doing things like Airbnb instead of hotels or ride share instead of owning a car. It's kind of this whole movement that contributed to the interest within the apparel market. And at Mintel, we had published a report in February. So a few months ago, which again seems like a million years ago. And that was on the circular economy. And that the data had been sourced in December. And at that point, so in December 2019, more than two-thirds of consumers were considering secondhand options for any type of item, whether it would be buying or selling, and 40% were considering rentals. And at that point, nearly 4 in 10 had already engaged in some sort of circular ownership. So this was really starting to impact the industry. And I think the interesting thing is that doesn't mean that consumers were stopping spending in the category. They were just kind of shifting how they were spending and being a bit more considerate of it. Hence why you see some of those traditional brick and mortar retailers or some of those specialty clothing stores like a J. Crew, a Gap, a Neiman's maybe struggling to evolve because the consumer was kind of evolving in a different area that they couldn't keep up with.
Yeah, and perhaps I'm getting into this a little bit too early, but I'm just wondering whether it's possible in the last tumultuous months of coronavirus crisis, and I appreciate we're still very much in that, but can you observe any of these trends being paid forward, if you like? Or is it too early to
start? Well, I mean, it is still early, but I think we can definitely talk about what we know already and what we have seen happen. That circular economy, the trend towards that is going to face some headwinds and tailwinds. I think the obvious challenge there is that now, because of the pandemic, consumers are hyper aware of cleanliness and sanitation. It's kind of sad that it takes a pandemic for people to know to wash their hands for 30 seconds, but that is the life that we're living right now, where everyone is super aware of their surroundings, how they're keeping themselves and their surroundings clean. And now that starts to, you know, turn the circular economy on its head a bit, because if I'm renting out a dress, how do I know who rented it beforehand? What did they do? I know you're telling me it was clean, but really, was it? How clean is it? All of those factors start to affect what is now going to be cleanliness becoming a major shopping driver. And that's going to impact the rental portion of that circular economy. However, you can make the argument on the resale side, like, do you really want to buy something that someone else owned? And the same concerns could persist. But now in America, especially, I'm not exactly sure what the unemployment situation is like in Europe or the UK, but, you know, we're facing unprecedented rates right now of unemployment in the US. And as that continues to climb, even if a consumer is not unemployed yet, most are worried or at least have some sort of caution with their financial situation, and they're spending all this time at home. So they're kind of in this mode of wanting to clean, get rid of things. They have the time. They may or may not need the money. Maybe they're just trying to make some quick cash because they don't have another source of income. Maybe they want to buy some new things to kind of keep them occupied, but they don't want to pay full price. So they're turning to resale platforms like a Poshmark or a Depop, and they are, you know, engaged in the circular economy in that aspect as well. And I know already Poshmark and Depop have reported increased sales and activity in April that I think are unprecedented for their sales. I think Depop reported that US sales were up 150% versus last year in mid-April. And I think they doubled in the UK. And then Poshmark had reported that their third week of April was their best ever sales week. So there's obviously still a demand and an interest in that aspect.
Yes, wow. That bit of insight is absolutely fascinating. And I think I read something recently where a philosopher was saying it takes 8 weeks for a change in behavior to become permanent. Now, who knows? Is it 4 weeks? Is it 10 weeks? But actually, I think already there have been some fundamental changes in behavior, particularly as they've come on the back of some of the trends that you were talking about before the crisis. So I think it is going to pay some of those trends forward.
For sure. I think that, you know, the trends will still be relevant. I think it's just they may evolve a little bit differently than we had anticipated back in December or January, even February. But I think that they are still going to be very relevant. And I think one sector of apparel that a lot of people are guessing that there's going to be challenges with is luxury. And of course, that is going to be, you know, naturally challenging just given the high price point and that kind of barrier of point of entry for most consumers. But on the flip side, if we are talking about consumers not wanting to spend much, not wanting to shop a lot, they're cutting back their shopping frequency and their spending, when they do buy, it might be more of that fewer, better mentality where, you know, you're willing to maybe invest a little bit in one purchase rather than buy a bunch of cheap things multiple times throughout the year. And again, that also contributes to this circular trend that we're talking about. So I think those trends will still continue to move forward, but they may just look a little differently than we originally thought pre-pandemic.
Yeah, that's interesting about luxury, because the received wisdom in certainly in the UK and parts of Europe is that when there's ever a recession or a crisis or there's too much competition, that generally luxury and discount seem to do okay. It's kind of that middle market. And over here, we've seen a number of kind of middle market fashion or clothing retailers go out of business. Having said that, most of them were already struggling already in a kind of overcrowded, overstocked, overstored market. So I think, you know, in some cases they were blaming crisis, but in truth, I think they basically were running out of cash. And this was the final straw that broke the camel's back, as it were.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing that in the US. I think everyone has been talking about a retail apocalypse for so long. And we know that, you know, retail is not going to go extinct. And I think the in-store experience is not going to go extinct, but everything has been changing for a while. And I think if nothing else, one thing we know right now as a result of the pandemic is that it just accelerated the problems for the retailers that had pre-existing issues. You know, sure. Like you said, they can't pay their bills. I think J. Crew here in the States, JCPenney, Neiman Marcus, it seems like every day there's someone else. And I think that some will be able to turn around from that and some won't, but it is really about, where were they before the pandemic? How much were they relying on the store experience? How much had they failed to evolve? Maybe they expanded too fast, too quickly, and they couldn't keep up. All of those things contributed to problems that only got heightened because of this kind of unpredictable event.
My worry, though, is that some of those brands you've mentioned to us are kind of, in some cases, the stalwarts of the retail industry. And if you add to that the Gap, who I've seen news about how they've already said, I think they were the first to break with the news to say, look, when we reopen, we're simply not going to open the number of stores that we had before.
We're definitely seeing that happen in the States. I think it is a time where retailers and brands will really need to reevaluate the physical presence. You know, how much is too much? Do you really need to have the real estate that you had before the pandemic? Probably not. And, you know, I think that had probably been a contributing factor of some of their growth challenges before we were in this situation. And I think now is really the time that a lot of these retailers that have been around for a while are really kind of taking inventory of their real estate. I think Nordstrom also, they announced their plans for like the phased reopening, and they will be closing 16 stores permanently. And they are arguably one of the very successful retailers. I mean, they certainly have challenges, but especially in the department store space, they are doing fairly well. And they'll be closing some stores. So I think it really is a time to really kind of reevaluate the real estate.
Yes, and I suppose at least from my point of view as a retail analyst, at least it gives me an opportunity to see some of the things I and my colleagues and other consultants have been saying, and indeed yourself, for a number of years, which is that things need to change. And I think we will see an acceleration of that over the next few years. There are lots of companies, too, that have been talking over the last few years about how retailers need to reinvent themselves. But can you get into some of the ways in which they should be doing this? Because, and I wanted you to base that on what the customer wants, because we're told the customer, and I think we know that because we're customers as well, they're always changing their mind. They're very demanding. They're very well informed. They're networked. All of these things, which sound pretty scary to me if I was a retailer. But what is it that the retailer has to do, given that they knew some years ago that they needed to go on a kind of digital transformation journey.
Yep.
But it kind of feels like they've run out of time to actually do that. So I don't know if you can get into what on earth retailers can actually do in order to reinvent themselves for this new world.
Sure. So I think it's twofold. I think it's less about having to do like a brand overhaul or a brand transformation. And it's more about focusing on two things. So the first is that retailers and brands really need to find new ways to meet the consumer where they are. So any retailer that had no digital presence or had a subpar or limited digital presence is going to be feeling the pain right now. I think, you know, you mentioned it really is about focusing on that digital aspect, and it is kind of figuring out ways that you can kind of meet the consumer in the middle. If right now they can't shop in a store in the States right now, we have pretty much drugstores, grocery stores, and our mass merchandisers like Walmart and Target. Those are the stores that are pretty much open right now. Sure. So it is very limited, especially in the apparel industry. Going digital with all aspects of the path to purchase is really, really crucial. And I also think that right now there is a benefit for the retailers because consumers have really no other choice but to turn all of those steps that they would normally make before buying online. So instead of going to a store to try on a product, they're going to be looking online or on social media. So how can you kind of meet that consumer at their, you know, on their path to purchase, either through your e-commerce site and or on social media? You can go digital with customer service and communication. In the States, we have e-commerce retailer Zappos. So they are mainly footwear, but they do sell clothing, and they piloted this customer service for anything initiative. So a customer can call them up on the phone, they can text, they can email them, they can tweet them, and literally ask them anything. So for Mother's Day, they had people tweeting them like, my mom's gluten-free, what can I bake for her? And then also like, what kind of shoes should I get for her if she needs X, Y, or Z? So it's kind of, you know, being there to help the consumer in a new and interesting way that still also makes sense for, you know, your business. Offering Zoom chats or tutorials using Instagram Live. This is the time to pilot and test those things. Not everything is going to work for every retailer, but right now is the time to kind of explore and test and learn the customer appetite and figure out which mix, whether it's all e-commerce site, all social media, a mix of Instagram and YouTube, whatever. Now is that time to test and learn. And I also think that applies to testing and learning the new ways of allowing customers to order and receive their goods. So there's a lot of talk about this move possibly to an appointment economy. You know, if I'm buying, if I'm looking for a new dress or even especially like in beauty, and normally you'd want to go to the stores to try on that product or to kind of see what's available, even as stores reopen, your ability to do that is probably going to be very limited because the stores are going to have a lot of restrictions in what you can actually do when you go to a store. So trying to allow customers to maybe look online, have better features so that they can see things virtually, maybe try them on virtually. And then if they really want to go to a store to try it on, make an appointment. And then that helps the retailer to kind of manage that in-store traffic because there will still be some hesitation. So now's the time to kind of get creative. Curbside pickup, maybe for stores that are starting to reopen and they never offered that before, you can kind of utilize that. I also think the second part of this is reevaluating the physical presence. So really, what is the role of the store going forward? If a customer can't try on a product in stores, if they are going to be very limited with how long they can be in a store or how many people can be in a store, then the role of the store is going to change. So I think utilizing that seamless shopping option, getting more consumers to conduct more of their steps on the path to purchase online initially is going to help leverage what happens in a store and online, and it's going to help keep consumers engaged, and they'll remember the retailers that were flexible, that were nimble, that were able to adapt and serve them as their needs changed.
No, that's an incredible answer and absolutely fascinating. I hadn't really thought about that. And I get the impression that actually you're urging retailers to look, have a go, experiment and do it now, because now is the perfect test case.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be perfect, because it's the normal approach to projects is, you know, we take 6 months to plan this and we'll roll it out slowly and then we'll see how it works. And maybe we'll roll it out across everywhere, by which time the crisis, if not over, will have morphed into something else entirely.
Exactly. Exactly. I think there is no one size fits all answer. And I think we don't have the time to really test in the way that we normally would. And I think retailers really need to take advantage of the situation right now where consumers are at home, they're online, they're on social media, and they still need things. And some of them may be bored, quite frankly, and looking to, you know, browse or discover. So it's, how can you take advantage of that? Take advantage of the situation there now. And if you can kind of get them interested or aware of things like the Zooms or the Instagram Lives or a curbside pickup or an online appointment option, that will help transfer them back into the stores as we are kind of phasing back that way. Because to your point, even in 6 months, I mean, I hope that we're back to as normal as possible, even though it'll be a new normal. We don't know that yet. It could go back to square one. It could be in this weird interim of having stores open, but not having them open the way we knew them before the pandemic. So this is really the time to kind of get creative and figure out what works for the retailer and for their core customer.
I'd love to ask you, because of all of the retail clients you have, who within the retail business is the most receptive to this kind of input, which I think is so important? Because I'm thinking, well, if I was a CFO, I'd be saying, Alexis, yeah, absolutely. I hear what you're saying, but I'm the CFO and I know that there's going to be one hell of an inventory problem coming over the next few months, which is, where the hell is it? How do I shift it? How much do I promote it? How can I still get my cash back to keep my business going, and so on and so on? And maybe they're not necessarily the most receptive to this kind of conversation. You know, is it the CEO? Is it operations? Is it marketing? Is it all of those people?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it really does take the team. I think the key part of answering that question does come down to regionality, because in the States, it is a challenge because we are so big and the effects of the pandemic and the impact is going to be not only phased, but it's going to be very regional. That's why we have some states that are opening up different stores and some, like I'm here in Chicago or in New York, where it's still very limited. So I think it really does take all hands on deck to figure out, maybe not all of these new initiatives or these things that you're experimenting with are going to work in all stores, but kind of how, if you are a retailer with a pretty big national presence, how can you kind of use your store count right now to your advantage? If there are states that are opening up already, maybe test the curbside pickup if you've never done it before. If you know that there are states where you are already doing that, maybe increase it once they start opening up. Maybe don't offer it in, if you have five stores in, you know, a certain mile radius, maybe don't offer it everywhere. Maybe, you know, kind of try to manage it. So I think it really is going to take, in terms of the people working at the retailers, it's going to take everyone to kind of come together as a team. And I know that that's not really like a super helpful answer, but I think that that is really the case. And I think from a retailer perspective, I'll use them as an example. Again, I think Nordstrom has done a really good job with this. I mean, they've been around for over 100 years. So that just speaks to, and they are still, you know, going pretty strong. So I think that they have proven that they are able to kind of put all the heads together internally, figure out, okay, this isn't working anymore. Now what do we need to do? I read that, you know, one of the big things that Nordstrom is known for is customer service. A customer is going to Nordstrom because they know they can get fashion there. They know they can get it for any occasion. They can get quality products, but they can also have that experience with like one-on-one with a salesperson. what's that going to look like when the stores reopen? So Nordstrom is starting to really figure out how they're managing the fitting rooms. They're going to have less open. They're going to keep products that were tried on off the floor for some period of time before putting it back. And they're going to be offering virtual styling sessions. So there's an example. It's how can I do something that maybe I haven't done before, leveraging my different channels and managing that on an offline customer. And I think it really does take everyone involved to kind of think that way.
I think that's key to what you just said. Everyone has to get involved because, as you know, retail can have a reputation for operating in silos, mm-hmm. operating in departments. And I think if nothing else, there is a recognition that this is a job for all the talents across all of the business to get their heads together to work out how to deal with the U word, unprecedented, which we've all overused over the last few months. But I think that's absolutely critical. Alexis, what are your plans now? What are you going to do next? I'd love to read that research from the end of last year, which I'm absolutely going to do my homework. But I'd just be keen to know what's next for you.
Well, I say this now, and then by the time this airs, I'm sure my plans will change because it seems like there's something new every day. But right now, what we are doing here at Mintel is really trying to kind of monitor the situation as it is unfolding. So we do have plans to touch on the pandemic within the different reports that we're publishing right now. So even if, you know, data was fielded a while ago, we are trying to at least offer our commentary on how it's affecting different sectors of the business. So for me, I am actually going to be doing quite a bit in the apparel space, looking at women's and men's clothing, looking at how the situation's evolving online as well. And then I'm working with our other retail analysts to hopefully produce some content that is focused on the impact of COVID specifically to retail, and then within that specifically to the grocery sector, apparel and beauty, which we think are kind of three of the biggest sectors that are either going to be at an advantage or a disadvantage because of the pandemic. So stay tuned for that. It feels like we are kind of updating that content every day because we learn something new every day.
That's right. Well, that's kind of makes it exciting as well. Alexis, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely riveting. And what I'll do is I'll post a few links on the actual podcast that people can click through to. And I hope that we get the chance to talk again.
I do too. Thank you so much for having me. And thanks for listening, everyone.